Our first Bible reading today will be from Daniel chapter 2, reading from verses 1 to 23. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I've had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we'll interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your house turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time, because you realize that this is what I firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing from any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God for ever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He disposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we have asked of you, and you have made known to us the dream of the king."
Continuing from verse 24. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dreams mean." The king asked Daniel, also called Belshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. As your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but so that your majesty may know the interpretation and that you may understand what went through your mind. Your majesty looked, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver and the gold were all broken to pieces and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. Your Majesty, you are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed all mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds in the sky. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will arise, inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of a mountain, but not by human hands, a rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honour and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you are able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks so much for having me. What a treat to be back. We're in Daniel 2. And last time we left, the four heroes of the story, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they were repopulated, re-educated, and renamed. And amongst all of that, they'd put a stake in the ground and trusted their God that even while the tide was flowing strongly against them, they would not be moved. And unlike those left in Jerusalem, in hometown, to be exiled from God in a dwindling city, these guys, it seemed, were actually with God in a thriving city in Babylon, though not the normal location of where God does his business. And as remarkable as Daniel and his three musketeers were, we noted that there were actually kind of less than 10 remarkable days in their life. Therefore, there was a lot of ordinary following God while they were away in Babylon, which was heartening for us, living in a Babylon now, that most of our time in our life is the ordinary following of God, trusting his word, trusting what he says. But this chapter outlines one of those 10 or so remarkable days. And it starts in the second year of the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 1. And he'd had a bad night's sleep, and doing what would happen in a superstitious culture, he summons all the help he can get. So verse 2, he gets the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the astrologers. He's leaving no one out of this scenario. All of them get a little beep on their pager, and so they put their best suits on, their cufflinks, they kiss their sweetheart goodbye at the door and say, "Honey, I'm going to see the king today," and everyone's very impressed. And as they go, they're beginning to wonder to themselves, "Well, whatever the dream is, I think today I'm going to say it's about fish. And that it's about the relationship he had with his father. And about how he is the greatest in the world. If I end that he's the greatest in the world, we always get nice goodies. And it's wonderful." So they arrive like normal in verse 4. And they say the phrase that they would have often said that will be repeated when Prince Charles become King Charles in Westminster Abbey. We've nicked it for the coronation. It says, "May the king live forever." Which always feels like a strange thing to say when the guy's mum died just now. But they say this, that's said now even today, "May the king live forever." And Nebuchadnezzar starts like Martin Luther King does, "I have a dream." But ends very differently. Just as these wise men always do, they promise to interpret the dream. Their job, like stock market investor guys today, like people interviewed on the news about, "Oh, look, what's going to happen in Afghanistan? What's going to happen in the future with China?" They're speculating, like many in the psychiatric profession today. They're nothing more than imaginative storytellers who give vague predictions and open-ended promises so that whichever way it goes, they tilt the scales of their words so they're always right. We're going to see if this is working. Let's see if we can click this guy. There we go. That's true. There he is, Daniel 2. Oh, there we go. How exciting. Thank you, Don, for doing that. My dad worked in a big bank in London. He wasn't particularly important in it, but he worked in this little department called R&D, Risk and Development, I think it was. Well, certainly it was the risk department. And it was kind of, I never quite understood it, being a teenager and a kid. But he explained it roughly like this. You know, Shell wants to build a new oil rig out to sea somewhere. They need 200 million to build it. So they come to my dad's bank, not like, it wasn't his. He comes to the bank and says, "Look, we'd like 200 million. And my dad's department was to kind of work out the risk that was associated with this $200 million development. And I said, "So what do you do, Dad?" He goes, "Look, we're going to knock around. We have a look. How did other oil rig things go? Did it end up okay?" And he says, "We normally just put 60% on it. 60% risk. And we'll always do a point something. So that when it succeeds, we can say, well, we did say it had a good chance of succeeding. And when it fails, we say, well, we did warn you." They're always the heroes. That's what these guys would do here. They'd always leave it open-ended. They'd always leave it so that they won either way. But this time it's different. It doesn't end like Martin Luther King's speech. He has a dream, but it's this. This is what I've firmly decided. Verse 5. "If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I'll have you cut into pieces, your houses turned into piles of rubble." So the king has a nightmare at night, and it turns into a nightmare in the day for everyone else. But it's not all bad. He explains the other side in verse 6. "Look, if you tell me the dream and explain it, you'll receive me gifts and rewards and great honour." So he's got two outfits to choose for Halloween. He's got the Darth Vader outfit or the Santa Claus outfit, and they've no idea which one he's going to put on. The wise men, of course, try and renegotiate the terms of the deal. "Well, how about the king, verse 7, tells his servants the dream, and we'll do our usual little look. It's about fish, it's about your relationship with your father, but you're the best in the world. We'll do it." And no, the king says, "No, you're just trying to buy time." I used to do that I had a year of studying Russian at school. I don't know how. I ticked a box one day and ended up being there. But the teacher we didn't really pay attention, but one guy wanted to do Russian quite seriously. His name was Richard Tibbles, which is a great name. And so whenever she asked us a question, we knew we just said this one phrase, "Is Venisha Pozhalsta," which I think means "excuse me, please." And that meant the teacher would repeat the question, which then gave us time to turn to Richard Tibbles and say, what's my answer? He'd then say some Russian phrase. By the time she turns around again, we could then say it. And they're doing this. They're saying, "Is Venisha Pozhalsta?" They're saying, "Oh, yeah." He says, "Look, you're just trying to buy time to try and find out from Richard Tibbles what the answer is." So now they get desperate. They've tried renegotiating, and now they try realigning the king to reality in verses 10 to 11. They say, verse 10, "Look, there's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king is asking is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods. They don't live among humans." There's so much right in their response as they try and realign the king's big values. There's so much right that shows Even the most superstitious or secular person is still somewhere anchored in reality. And they're saying, look, that's just too big. He's blown their cover and he's saying, look, it's just too big. It's like when a kind of a Benny Hinn type fake miracle worker in America is asked to give someone a leg back. And they're kind of like, well, look, come on. You know, there's limits to what I can do. I'm fine for the back straightening, but I can't actually... They're saying, look, that's too hard for anybody to do. It's too much. Now, what's all this got to do with our four friends from Jerusalem? Well, this made the king, verse 12, so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. And men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. And that's where they come in. Our Jewish friends get caught up in all of this too. It's dream or death. Now, what's in his head, or it's yours? And their response is telling, and it's our first point. We don't fear the wrath of dictators. We don't fear the wrath of dictators. Arioch the hunchman comes along in verse 14, the commander of the king's guard. He's come to put them to death. What does Daniel do? He doesn't run for the hills. He doesn't bargain. He doesn't hand his friends over and say, look, you take those three and spare my life. Verse 14, he spoke with wisdom and tact. He doesn't fear the wrath of dictators. Instead, verse 16, Daniel went into the king. Here's a guy who's got two Halloween outfits, Santa or Darth Vader, and you don't know which one he's going to choose, but he doesn't fear the wrath of dictators. He goes straight into him so that he might interpret the dream for him, verse 16. Then having spoken with one king, he goes to his three friends, to their house, to plead with another king for the answer to the dream. Verse 18, he calls a prayer meeting. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. It shows who he really fears. And it's not the wrath of the dictator, but the God of heaven. So he asks him for help. He calls a prayer meeting. God is the powerful one out of the two in his economy. He is the king for a time. He asks the king for time, Nebuchadnezzar. He asks him for time, but he pleads with God for mercy. Because he sees the power structure of earth and heaven. And he has his fears rightly aligned between the two. He can ask for time here, but then he knows that God is the one who controls time. What an example for us in an unknown world as ours. And the blurry picture of Daniel is made even crisper and clearer with Jesus, who, as the night he was betrayed, spent most of his time praying. And God hears and answers Daniel, revealing the dream in a vision, verse 19. And whereas we would straightaway run off, as soon as we've got the answer, we run straight off to tell the king to spare our lives, Daniel does the right thing and praises God, which is always the trickier thing. It's remarkable how often we plead with God for something to happen, and as soon as it happens, it's out of our inbox and it's gone. I find on the camps that we lead, when it comes to the every afternoon we pray before dinner, and we try and pray through every camper every day. But it's amazing when we start the prayers, we're saying, hey, just one line prayers. Let's thank God for all the things he's given us today, including answering all the prayers we prayed for just yesterday, this exact same room at this exact same time. It's amazing how short those prayers last for. How hard we find it just to thank him for the stuff he's given us, even when we asked him the day before. Because we ask him for stuff, we're getting right the power structure of heaven and earth. But when we fail to thank him, it's amazing how quickly we've forgotten. The secular wise men of today, or the superstitious wise men of yesterday, are both impotent and ignorant. So they have no choice but to fear the wrath of dictators. They're nothing more than searching around in the tea leaves. But Daniel and his buddies, they don't fear the wrath of dictators. Instead, our second point, they praise the revealer of mysteries. I've gone for 3 hours today. That's what Rico Tice, the evangelist, always says. You've always got to preach the 2 hours in evangelism, repentance and wrath. And that's dead right, isn't it? He gets away with it because he suspects it. So we praise the revealer of dreams. We will praise the revealer of mysteries, the revealer of dreams. It's great fun when you have kids to talk, ask them. We ask them every morning over breakfast, what were your dreams? What dreams did you have?
How'd you get on in your dreams? And I love to muck around with my kids, especially if they wake up in the middle of the night with a nightmare. I say, I tell you what, you go back to sleep and we'll both have a dream and we'll hang out together in the dream and I'll buy you some ice cream in the dream. And that's great. And in the morning they always say, Dad, I was there. Where were you? The ice cream said, I'm so sorry, son. I forgot my wallet. And then the next night they'll say, oh, can we have a dream together tonight? I said, yeah, sure. Let's have a dream together tonight. So I'll say, I'll meet you in the forest. And then we'll go. And the next morning say, Dad, I was in the forest and you weren't there. And I'll say, what do you mean? I waited half an hour for you. Which tree were you by? And they'll describe the tree. And I'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was by the fallen down tree over there. Tonight, well, and it's great fun. But I can only ever find out what their dream is when they tell me. I'm not clear. I can muck around with them. But I can't find out what their dream is until they reveal it to me. They have to tell me because only they know. They have to reveal it to me, but not so with God. He is able to, verse 22, reveal deep and hidden things. How? Why? Well, because wisdom and power are his, verse 20. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. Like many people, uni was the time when I found out that God was sovereignly in charge of everything. And like many people at uni, I was particularly unsympathetic with how I dealt with people that didn't quite agree with my view. I remember one very long chat with a guy called Elliot. I wasn't particularly helpful and godly, but I was right. And in discussion, and it really helped sharpen my thinking, and this is why it is good to chat and debate with people, that his view was very much that God just has seen the movie already. And has now rewound the tape and we're watching it together. But here it makes it very clear. It's not that God just knows. Why is he able to reveal deep and hidden things? It's not that he's seen the tape before. It's that verse 21, he is the one doing it. And the great news is that God doesn't keep this wisdom to himself. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. Which when I first read, I thought it's that he finds wise people and he gives wisdom to them. He finds a discerning person and he gives knowledge to them. But no. He's saying, look, if there is a wise person, it is because God has given them the wisdom. If there is someone who is discerning, it's that God has given them that knowledge. That is how they became that thing. It's like saying a bride and a ring. The bride becomes a bride because someone gives them the ring. That's what makes them the bride. So those who are wise are given that by God. And so Daniel praises God for giving him this wisdom and power, verse 23. Making known to us the dream of the king, he praises the Lord. He praises the revealer of dreams, the revealer of mysteries. And we certainly, in our tradition, praise God as he is forgiving our sins in Jesus. But here we're encouraged to praise him for giving us wisdom in Jesus. I did a little wordplay on forgiving there. I thought it was quite clever. For what greater mystery is there in the world than the gospel? And who has known the mind of God, asks Paul. But the Spirit has revealed to the apostles from Jesus the knowledge of the love of God. The greatest mystery, to know not the thoughts just of an earthly king, but the King of heaven. So let's take this encouragement here from Daniel to praise that revealer of mysteries, the revealer of dreams. Have you found when chatting to a non-Christian, you get that feeling when you're halfway through the conversation, you just think, why don't you get it? Why don't you see? And we leave thinking, I'm so glad that I'm forgiven. But more than that, I'm so glad that I've been given wisdom and power to know the gospel. The great mystery. Because that has come from him. I didn't figure this out myself any more than Daniel was figured out the dream. Oh, I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. We walk away from an evangelistic chat with someone. For you've given me wisdom and power. You've made known to me what we asked of you. You've made known to us the mystery of the King of heaven. No longer blind and bound, no longer deaf and dumb. And so Daniel runs off to see the king. And Arioch, his military handler, introduces him verse 25, and the king can hardly believe it in verse 26. He says, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? Really? And Daniel gets this in verse 27. He knows this is an unbelievable task. set before him. And he says almost the exact same speech that the enchanters gave in verse 10. He says, look, this is really, really tricky. The difference between the two speeches is the first letter of the alphabet. They say, no one knows except the gods. But Daniel says, no one knows except a God. There is a God in heaven, he says. It's not that the gods know somewhere mysteriously. He says there is a God in heaven who knows. He's saying, like we do, it's not that I know everything, but I know the one who knows everything. Daniel says, as we say, as we tell our friends, it's not that I know it all, but I know the one who knows it all. I'm just the go-between. Hands up if you're on a family WhatsApp. Like your whole family does quite a lot of messaging. We do, thank you, we do a lot of it, obviously, with me being here, and they're all scattered around the UK. We do a fair amount of it, and sometimes it gets really exciting because we get a trickle of photos from movie sets and TV shows. So we get to see behind the scenes of exotic houses and things like that. This is from the most popular Netflix show of the last... the most popular Netflix show ever. And we get to see the stars of TV shows mucking around and having a good time. We get to see sometimes video clips from behind the sets of TV shows. This little video clip that all the stars were dancing when the cameras weren't on. We get to see, before the TV show gets released on Netflix, we get to find out who gets married on the TV show. Even if I've no idea who the characters are, but I know if I did watch it, that's who would have got married. Now, why is it that I'm able to do that? Well, it's because as you sit and watch... all of the credits, there's one name that stands out for us, and that's my brother. My brother was the head sound engineer on the most popular Netflix show, TV show of all time. And it's really exciting. We get to see well in advance. We didn't know it would be the most popular TV show of all time on Netflix, but we get to see well in advance all the stuff that goes on, because that's my brother. He's there behind the scenes all the time doing the stuff. He's worked on, we've been sent video clips of Brad Pitt swearing at him when he worked on Fury. We've shared the joy of him being on, he didn't win an Oscar, but the team won an Oscar for his work on Dunkirk. And it's really exciting. Now, why do I tell you this? Partly to show off. I'm really proud of my brother. He's pretty great. He was a real troubled kid at school, and no one would ever, of my home church, would ever mention his name because it was kind of a bit of embarrassing, a bit of family shame. But now no one can shut up about him. Since whenever we go home, it's like, so how's your brother doing? Whereas before, it was always like, how's your brother doing? And so really proud of him. But this is the best illustration I could think of, this thing here, where now, it's not that this, he's like Daniel, and he is there. He gets to see it all and share that with us, and we get to see the future before it happens, to get a glimpse of what's going to go on in the past. He's working on season 2 at the moment of that TV show, and it sounds, as boring as the first season. And look, we praise the revealer of mysteries. The king of Babylon here is being shown a glimpse of the future. Daniel is working on the set behind the scenes, able to show what is going to happen, because he knows the director, the screenwriter of history. And that changes all the outlook and all the output. And so Daniel now outlines the famous dream, just like my brother's able to tell what is going on behind the scenes of big TV shows and movies. And so the picture's quite clear. There were more whiteboard pens. Oh, they looked over here. And so the picture's quite clear. There's a head of gold. Then there's, what's the next bit? Someone's get this wrong. Help me out. How much arms, and there's a belly somewhere, and I never quite know what
arms of silver.
There we go. And then there's a belly of something else, which I never quite know what the difference is between a belly and a chest. And then you've got the belly and then the thighs. That's the top. Is that above the knee?
Yeah.
That's bronze, is it? So that's gold. And then it's silver. Then it's bronze. Standard Olympic fare. And then we get... here we go. Then we get the iron. How far does that go down?
Just the legs.
Just the legs.
Slightly.
And then the feet are the half and half. Let's get some another colour. Let's get back to the red of the iron and clay. Here we go. So he gets to see that vision. He's absolutely nailed it. He knows exactly what it's all about. And most commentators will tell us very helpfully that this is most likely going to be that this is him. That's what Daniel says. This is Nebuchadnezzar. This is the Babylonian Empire. That's the Babylonian. Then next comes the Persians. And then is that the Medes? That's the Greeks, and then this is the Romans, and then the Romans kind of cuts in two. Well, you can divide it up various different ways, but that's one of the things that's very clear, is that there's a thing, there's going to be various empires that come after you, but that is Nebuchadnezzar, that head of gold. That's him, Daniel says. That's the dream. And it's a little bit like, a lot of this, of course, is like back in Exodus when Joseph has all the dreams and things like that, right? And in Genesis. So a lot of it's like that bit here. There's obvious bells ringing. But this is also going to be a lot like the crazy second half of Daniel, when it all turns a little bit weird. And then there's four big scary things. There's big scary beasts and monsters that are going to kind of do lots of stuff. There's similarities there as well. But there's two big things. There's the statue, and then there's the rock that's going to come along, and this rock that's kind of made out of mountain. And what's emphasized a lot in both pictures is whether or not they're made and who they're made by. The two big things, the statue and the rock. One is made, the other is not. The statue is not made by the statue. The statue is not made by the statue, which is saying to Nebuchadnezzar, your power was not made by you. Instead, verse 37, your majesty, still with great respect and honor, interestingly, you are the King of kings, the God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. He has placed it in your hands. The statue didn't make the statue. Nebuchadnezzar, you are not here on your own efforts. You didn't earn this or learn this. You have been made. But also interesting, the rock is not made. It's not made with human hands. Have a look at verse 45. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, but not by human hands. Again, the emphasis comes. Instead, it will endure forever. So this rock is not made, it just kind of got there. It's begotten, but not made. It's just always been there. It's not made, it's begotten, it's there. And it will, verse 44, endure forever, which gives us our final point. That look, we stand on the rock of destruction. We don't fear the wrath of dictators. We do praise the revealer of dreams, the revealer of mysteries, and we stand on the rock of destruction. And this, of course, comes absolutely true. That the Babylonian, the Persian, the Greek, and the Roman Empire no longer stand or are feared. For where can the great empires of the statue be found? Two guys in our kind of circles have just gone to London to work for a church over there, Ryan Leon and Matt and Tessa Smith. And Ryan Leon sent his first prayer update, and he had a little trip around the British Museum, which is a great museum, really, to one thing, that find us keepers when it comes to the British Empire. And he sent some photos around of some of the stuff he's seen. And you know, where is this great head of gold? Where is the great Nebuchadnezzar now? Well, his stuff can be found in the room 55 at the British Museum. That's where he is. As for Persia, look, when we can leave WA on an aeroplane, who wants to go to Tehran? Is that anyone's go-to list? Of course not. As for Athens and Rome, since inventing philosophy and democracy, they've pretty much been cruising, haven't they? They're fun to go and visit, but as a museum, not as the centre of some current movement. A word comes from another world, and it's come as a warning to all kings and powers. It is given to you. You are made. You did not make yourself. And so if it's a warning for them, it's a warning for people today too. It's a warning for Dawkins, for Buffett, for Murdoch. There will come a point when you've lived without God, you are not self-made, and you will be smashed to pieces. But there is a rock who comes as a carpenter, and one thing he definitely knows how to make is a coffin for kings. And Jesus hints of this when he says, hey look, I'm a rock. I'm a rock that's either tripped over or is a foundation for life, a cornerstone for building your life upon. and for prime ministers, politicians, those in power today, one day you'll just be the answer to some Christmas quiz question. That's all you'll be. Who was the prime minister during the COVID epidemic? It'll just be a quiz question one day. And like when my brother sends all the photos of the TV show in the future, you know, it makes the actual thing so less impressive when you know that's how it was made. The dazzle's gone. It's less awful and less awesome. To bring it to today, you know, there's two things you've got to have read in 2021 or listened to. One is you've got to listen to the Mike Driscoll Rise and Fall podcast, otherwise you're out of most Christian conversations. And you've got to have read this book, otherwise you look like a total nomad. Carl Truman's book. And I found this immensely helpful because it just showed, hey, look, you know, you start with Rousseau, and then you've got the Romantics, and then you've got the kind of Marx, Darwin, Freud element, and it just... it all just falls apart. Look, the emperor's got no clothes and these were his tailors. And the rock has come and smashed it all to pieces. But right now it feels so big and awesome and powerful, the cultural influences at us today. But they are to be smashed to pieces in the face of the rock of Jesus. Just imagine how comforting Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah would have found it knowing that, yeah, sure, he's so shiny and big, but boy, it's going to be smashed. We can keep trusting God even though it looks like he's not here. That these are not revolutions, these are evolutions. The sexual revolution today is not a revolution. It is an evolution of what's always been going on. That people make themselves gods and kings in the age of one God and one king. And that they will be smashed. That's the revolution that's coming. The sexual revolution has not happened. It will happen when Jesus returns. That's a revolution. Everything else is just an evolution. So what do? We stand on the rock of destruction and make that our foundation. Not fearing the wrath of dictators now. Even Nebuchadnezzar gets that as the story wraps up. He pays honor and order that an offering and incense be presented to Daniel and his God. Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries. But that's what you're able to do just now. Feels like in our day, everybody knows and no one rules. Daniel 2 tells us, no, only God knows and only God rules. I'll pray. Praise be your name, God, forever and ever. Wisdom and power are yours. You change times and seasons. You depose kings and raise up others. You give wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. You reveal deep and hidden things. You know what lies in darkness and light dwells with you. We thank and praise you, God of our ancestors. You've given your apostles and through them us wisdom and power. You've made known to us what we asked of you. You've made known to us the mystery of the King. Amen.